So I'm all buzzed up now, ready for the podcast.
How are we
gonna... I'm all caffeinated, ready for the podcast.
Thank you guys for joining us on our first podcast interview with my good friend Brandon Jenner here, and we're in the beautiful city of Malibu. Beautiful place, man. Thanks for having us out.
Thanks for coming out.
Man, yeah.
I've just so enjoyed getting to know you, Shane. Let me tell you, what a lovely individual. Do you know, can I tell the story of how we met?
Yeah, please.
Yeah?
Do.
Yeah? Are you sure?
Yeah, let's do
it. I don't
it.
Mean to, you know, steamroll your podcast.
No, you got more experience than I do.
Well, it was great because a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to donate a flight.
Yep.
His father had recently passed away. I think it was like a form of leukemia, blood cancer. So he was raising money for blood cancer. And he's a great bass player, a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, absolutely. That sounds great. So wouldn't you know, somebody got it online, right? It was an online thing that he did it. And he told me, hey, somebody bought that flight. And so I was like, all right, well, let me meet this guy that bought the flight. And Shane showed up, nicest guy you could ever hang out with, and turned out to be a pilot as well. So we had a really awesome flight and became buddies right away. And
absolutely.
I'm super interested in all the things that you're doing because you're just so focused and smart, and you got all your ducks in a row, you know?
I appreciate it.
Probably doesn't feel like that all the time, does it?
No.
Doesn't
never,
for me either.
Yeah, I always want to keep moving and grooving.
Controlled chaos, I guess.
Yeah, and I was actually telling Tim that I enjoy doing, you know, like charities, doing a good cause, but also we get a good experience from it.
Yeah.
And I was super excited just to come out and fly.
That's
I got out with my bag, and you said, you're a pilot.
I remember that was
shocking for you.
Oh, I was so happy, because, I mean, it's fun to just take somebody that's just kind of like going, oh, wow, okay, yeah, we're in the sky. But to be able to, you know, have, especially because I love the tailwheel thing, and there's not a lot of pilots out there that are into the tailwheel.
Yeah, and you taught me how to land. That was the first time I ever flew one.
You flew great. You flew really well. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of, you know, it's tough to jump into a tail dragger all of a sudden like that, and kind of have a good handle on it, but you flew really well. And we got to do a nice little roll, first time upside down on a plane.
Yeah, that was my first barrel roll, actually, was with him. So
good,
that was awesome,
good,
man.
Good.
Yeah. My fiance was like, Shane, why'd you do a barrel roll? You know? But it's not dangerous, you know, if you do it safe.
Totally, no. If you keep it, it's a 1G maneuver, positive G's all the way over the top. It's a very basic maneuver. There's videos of guys. There was a 777, I think, that did a barrel roll. The test pilot did it for the Boeing guys when they came out to show it.
There's an old
video of it.
You know,
it's a very low level, just kind of brings it up and over. And it's a very basic maneuver, very safe if you know how to do it right.
I'm going to have to definitely get back and learn how to do that.
Your Columbia will do it.
So how long have you been flying, actually?
It's been 20 years.
20 years?
Or more, yeah.
Wow.
I started in college. Mm-hmm. I actually started because I was sitting on the couch playing guitar in Boulder, super hippie, stoned, I'm sure, and playing guitar, because I was with my buddies, and the TV just was on. We didn't really watch it that much, but we were like, it would just be on in the background. And I remember looking over and seeing an ad that said 1-800-BE-A-PILOT. On the TV, I was like, I'm calling that number. I'm like, I want to call that number, right? And I have memories of both my dads. When I say both my dads, my biological dad, Caitlin, who was Bruce, and David Foster, they were both pilots at one point. And I have memories of flying with Caitlin. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, this seems like a good thing to be doing, you know, while I'm at college, learning something also fun.
Were they excited you getting into it?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, David and I think that I called, and then he was coming out like a few days later or something like that to visit with my mom and stuff, like a little family visit at me at college. And I think we went together for our first introductory flight. So I went with David to Jeffco Airport. They said, well, we've got a flight school, or there's a flight school down there, Jefferson County Airport. And so I went down there and was hooked. I did one lesson, and I was like, I'm the guy, you know, really awesome instructor, young guy that was like, when you want to come back, man, I'll teach you how to fly.
Yeah,
and I was like,
I'm,
you know, it's 20 minutes down the road.
Yeah.
So that's when I started. I did my solo cross country over to Nebraska, flew to myself to Nebraska.
Oh, wow.
And then, which wasn't that, I mean, it was, you know, one of those cross countries that you do, it wasn't that far.
I think it was 150 nautical miles, and one for 250 or something
like that.
Right?
Yeah, I think it was might have been the longer one.
Yeah,
I think it was the long one that I did. And, you know, did the short, then the long. And then 9/11 happened. So this was, you know, when was that?
2001? 2001, yeah.
2001, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would be over 20 years that I've been flying.
That's amazing. Okay.
9/11 happened, and then I grounded general aviation for a little while, fell out of it, kind of. I moved back home and I started building a recording studio because the music thing was really taking off for me and I was just super invested in that. So I came home and then we had a place on the other end of Malibu, and one day a helicopter showed up and landed on our lawn. We had this big lawn. This was at David's, you know, David and my mom's house. They had a pretty grandiose place.
I can imagine.
And a couple guys get out. One of them was a piano player that was coming for a visit, and he was with another guy, this Brit older man named John. And he gets out, and he was like just lovely, and he's like, oh, I'm a flight instructor. I was like, I got to get back into it. Can I get your number and all that stuff? And then John and I flew for years, just, you know, I would fly once or twice a week, just go out to Van Nuys Airport and got my multi-instrument, my, you know, my private, my multi-instrument, and then did my helicopter add-on, and then got my commercial helicopter.
Oh, you did helicopter too?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, so I got my commercial helicopter license, and
flew a few
tours, like, and initially when I got it, you know, we kind of like take people around and do, like, you know, some Malibu tours. I still kind of fantasize about, you know, doing that one day down the road, you know, as like a, I should put it up on my website as part of the merch, you know, like, you could come and do a helicopter flight. I'll take you for a LA tour.
You know? Oh, there you go. Yeah, the first time I came, you flew me in the plane, you know, around Malibu and everything.
Yeah, we did, right? We came through Malibu and checked it out.
Yeah.
It's nice to see it from the air also, right?
Oh, Malibu, man, it was.
It's such an amazing coastline.
That was the first time I've ever been to Malibu at that time, too.
Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing story. Malibu has such a great, it's just got such a great story.
So how long have you been in Malibu?
My whole life. I was born, my mom had a house. She's got, my mom's in the canyon over from, so basically like the next canyon over. My mom is still in that house.
Yeah.
She always kept it, and that was the house that I was brought home from the hospital in.
Oh, man.
Too.
That's amazing.
And then my little brother has a, in the next canyon over, he's got his place. And then my dad is up Decker over here. And so we're all still really local. I mean, that's the real one reason why, you know, you always think about, like, where would you go if you ever moved, you know, and there's definitely some places that are alluring to me, but my wife's family, they're together, her parents, they're down the road. Pat is up in Santa Barbara. Paige, she's in Ventura. Like, everybody's here, and that's so important to me, family. And, you know, I wouldn't dare take my kids away from their grandparents.
Oh, absolutely.
It's such a great relationship.
I didn't realize that all of you guys are so local like that.
Yeah,
wow.
We're all really local, so that's the biggest, you know, pull. I wouldn't really leave permanently unless everybody were to leave, right?
Would to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling actually Tim on the way here, I said, every time I come visit you, I love seeing that you guys have a tortoise and chickens, and you guys do eggs and stuff. How long have you guys been in that?
A while. I mean, I've had chickens here for quite some time. I mean, I just love, like, having your own eggs.
Yeah.
You know? I actually don't eat the eggs that often. I'm like very plant-based, but the kids do. And I have them every once in a while, but it's nice to have, like, a just overflowing eggs, and we give them away and stuff. But
that's cool.
I've had chickens here ever since I moved, ever since I really bought the place, probably, which is about, you know, I guess 11 or 12 years ago. And the tortoise is my wife's dream. She's always wanted a tortoise. And so she's responsible for that. And I love the tortoise. Well, I love the idea of having a tortoise. I don't know if I love the animal. It's fine. It's totally fine. We're buds. But it's cool to have a dinosaur around. Like, we were
That's
talking.
What
we
she
were hanging down
them,
there.
Yeah.
It's like a dinosaur.
Yeah, I got to feed it. What was it, a zucchini? I think I've got zucchini.
It's real.
I didn't know they could eat those.
It sees it and comes on and takes a big bite.
That's crazy, yeah.
It's got like a beak
and
its tongue.
It is cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah. So I was curious, what other hobbies do you have, or like interests do you, other than, I know flying, I know you have a great passion for singing, but what are some other things that you do for fun?
Well, it's a good question. So I kind of have this idea in my life that I want to simplify my life into the things that are really important to me.
Yeah.
And really it comes down to three categories. Family.
Family.
Music and self-care. And so, and it maybe not in that order, maybe it's family, self-care, and
the music
and music. Yeah. And only because, you know, my family is so important. I will sacrifice my own self-care if need be to make sure that my family's life is as good as it can be. And I do that sometimes, you know, I skip working out and I'll skip eating right and all that stuff just because
they need something
of the, the things that, you know, the things I have to do to make sure that I'm taking care of my kids properly. And then music, you know, is just such a creation, right? Like it really fills my cup to be able to create something that didn't exist, and also to have something that allows me to release all of the emotions and the ideas and the feelings that I have in an artistic way. It's just something that's always been really important to me. But, you know, self-care, kind of subcategories within that self-care thing. Oh, exercise is a big thing.
Exercise,
I'm really committed to, you know, every morning going and working out with. I have a great group of guys that I go and work out with pretty much, you know, 6 days a week. We take Sundays off.
Wow.
Sauna, you know, heat and cold kind of therapy stuff, you know, so doing a lot of that. And then I love flying. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. I love working on the plane, so I love doing things.
Oh, you do your own work on
it? I love it.
It's like
the
best. Okay, wow.
Yeah, not all of it. I mean, you need an MP and you need an IA to like do annuals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I love working alongside them and just learning about the plane and any kind of things that I can do under their supervision. Yeah, I'm all about it. I just love it. It's so cool. Mm-hmm. I love the learning how things work. I just and then with my kids lately, with my boys especially. They are super into motorcycles. They're
really?
Super, oh, they're super
like
into motorcycles
motocross?
Right now. Motocross. So we've got a couple quads in the shed over there. And then I got my little, you know, mini bike. And we just go ride around. We ride around the neighborhood. We cross the creeks. We find mud and find stuff. We come back just like muddy as all hell.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, it's fantastic. It's great. So I'm on the, you know, I like to ride the motocross bike. I like to fly. And those are things that just kind of keep me happy and sane so that I can show up in the best way possible for my family and for music.
Yeah. One thing I think is neat is that it seems that you, music is something you're passionate about, but also you like to do things you're curious about. Like you said, you before we started filming, you like to, you know, go to next level, learn something new. So always learning, it seems like.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just, there's certain things that just fascinate me. You know, I had that big epiphany in college, actually, when I went to college. And most of the things, school, generally speaking, high school and prior, was a pain in the ass. I just really didn't like school. I just wanted to hide in the back of the class. I never chose a front seat. I just wanted to, like, hide in the back and get it over with, you know? Mm-hmm. When I went to college, I had a class. It was an astronomy class. And it was a great teacher. And I still sat in the back. But I was fascinated. And I actually would want it, like, went home and I was excited about the textbook. And I was like, man, I went home and I would read it. And I was like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah, it just sparked your interest.
Just sparked my interest.
Yeah.
And so that was really what I studied mostly in college, was studied cosmology, you know, astrophysics and astronomy. I was just, like, super into it, you know, some physics courses and light and stuff. And those were the things that really were inspiring to me. And I think it's because a big reason of it is that these are people that are using our surroundings to really trying to understand the fundamental question, which is why are we here? What's the purpose to all
this?
It's
a big
stuff?
Question.
You know, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, people look in so many different ways, right? There's people that look internally through meditation, their own consciousness, to try to discover what that means to them. Mm-hmm. There's people that are, you know, build these massive microscopes, essentially, that are banging particles together and looking inward to try to answer that question. And then there's people that are looking outward, that are building telescopes and doing math, very complex math, to try to figure out what the universe looks like and what created it all, if anything did. Mm-hmm. And I just think those are really cool questions that have always interested me. And this is something I think about multiple times a day. You know, what's the reason behind all this?
Yeah, what's the purpose?
I just think it's fascinating. So I was always drawn to astronomy. And then I just love knowing how things work. You know, when it, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, camera gear like this or things in the studio gear, I want to understand
how it works.
How, right?
You're very hands on.
Yeah. I want to understand how. And I like to learn how to do things myself.
Yeah. So going into your music stuff, so what inspired you to get into music, and like when did it start? Like what was that beginning moment for you?
So my parents were musicians. My mom and my dad were are songwriters, mm-hmm. and my stepdad had a home studio all the time, very successful producer around music all the time growing up. Mm-hmm. I always viewed it as like, oh, that's just what my parents do for work. I never really I always appreciated it. I liked music. I used to sing a little bit when I was young. I sang demos for them sometimes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was involved with it, but it was just kind of on the periphery, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because you grew up in it, wasn't like...
Gotcha. You know, I never had my peers really saying this is what you should do because my last name was Jenner. So mm-hmm. when I would show up on the basketball court or on the field in middle school or whatever, it was like, oh, give Jenner the ball. Jenner, because of Bruce Jenner, right? So I always mm-hmm. just kind of assumed I guess that I'm supposed to be an athlete.
An athlete, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would, whether it was through just sheer terror or grit or determination, I would set some of the track and field records at schools and middle school and stuff like that because I was just, either I was good at it or I was just, I couldn't fail, right?
yeah.
Couldn't let people down.
What made you, it gave you a drive, I guess.
Gave me a drive, yeah. For sure. So I just kind of always thought that was what I was supposed to do. And when I went to college, a main reason why I went to that college in Colorado was because I wanted to really pursue snowboarding. And I just dove in head first. I mean, I was 150 days a year in the park working on, freestyle snowboarding, essentially. And it was in the dorms when mm-hmm. I was at college. Two things happened. One, everybody was changing their majors. Mm. So I went in as an undecided, right? I didn't know what I wanted to do. But there were people in the dorms that knew what they wanted to do. They were like, oh, I'm here to be a doctor. I'm going to do this. Yeah. I'm going to do that. And within a few months, they were changing. Hmm. And I was like, wow, so nobody really knows what they want to do here.
Yeah.
Even if they feel like they know what they want to do, there's a lot of people that really don't know what they want to do here. Hmm. And the other thing that happened was the person across the hall from me had a guitar and taught me how to play Sweet Home Alabama. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. Bum, 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 da-dum, and I was like, this is so cool. And it was at that moment when I realized, how awesome music is, just as to be able to pour your life's energy into it, the longevity in it. It's something that you can do for a long time. You can't be a pro snowboarder your whole life, right?
Yeah. You can do it for fun or business.
There's a shelf life.
Yeah.
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 And it really filled it filled something. I mean, as soon as I learned my first few chords, I started writing songs because that was what was really important, As my stepdad said one time, a couple years later after college, he said, so you want to write songs? I was like, yeah. He goes, well, do you have something to say? And I was like, yeah,
good question.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I have a lot that I want to say. And he's like, all right, well, then you're a songwriter. I mean, it's like, that's really what it comes down to. Do you have something that you want to say? And that was something that really drove me. So I started writing songs from the very beginning, playing music. But it wasn't until college that I was just like, this is what I'm doing. And I treated it like I got a lot of, time to make up. I'm starting at 19 or whatever it was. I was just like, I'm just going to live with my guitar.
Yeah.
And live with melodies and writing songs, and this is just going to be my whole thing. And started recording myself from the very beginning with little 8-tracks and this and that, and or 4-track, recorders. Mm-hmm. And just dove in, came home after my third year, halfway through my third year of college, and built a studio because I knew that that's what I wanted to do, and gave up snowboarding and motocross. I blew my knee out riding motocross.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, at a motocross track and at some point.
So did you compete in motocross?
I was just going to do track days and stuff, but I was super into it. I was out on the motocross tracks, working at it. Yeah.
But fun.
I grew up doing it. I grew up doing it. I just kind of had a bit of a freak accident and tore my ACL and had surgery.
Oh, wow.
So that was a big setback where I was just like, yeah, I don't really want to live injured my whole life and stuff. So I was like, I'm just going to dive into making music. And that's kind of all I've done ever since,
So in the songwriting process when you're doing it, is it spontaneous? Like, hey, look, that just it hits you man, I'm going to sing about that. Or do you sit down and just kind of plan it a little bit?
It's a combination of those two things. Mm-hmm. If somebody ever tells you that, oh no, music just comes to you out of nowhere, and I just, oh, that's kind of fucking, I would challenge them and say, I'd be really impressed by them. Mm-hmm. I think a vast majority of songwriters, if not all, have to treat it like work. You have to sit down and do it, you know.
Be disciplined, take time.
You know, inspiration only comes when you're available for it. And you have to make yourself available for inspiration as well. You have to really be in that mindset of like, I'm a songwriter, I've got my tools close by so that if I am struck by inspiration, I can put it down, I can kind of begin the process. So you really have to work, but of course there are things that happen in life that do steer you and motivate you to, you know, take things and put them into words. And I've had a few of those things happen in my life that have been, you know, very, very inspired. I've had a couple, you know, a few songs that have been really inspired by life's events that end up being the things I think I'm also kind of the most proud of, because they were intended to really try to heal and help people process emotions.
No, I love that.
Yeah.
So are there any kind of like artists or bands that kind of that you kind of were inspired by too when you were growing up? I guess because you were in the music industry, all your family, I guess you had access to a lot of different ones.
I did, but you know, as a kid, like I listened to, that's the other thing maybe that made me not get into music right away with, because my parents, because they were, you know, writing and recording music that I really had no interest in, you know,
with all due
respect to them, like it's great stuff. But like I was listening to rap, like I was listening to, and like, you know, speed metal, like I was listening to stuff that like a young kid would listen to, you know. So, you know, I was always listening to different kind of stuff. So it wasn't like, even though that's what they did, it wasn't like, oh, that's what I want to do. It, you know, just didn't feel like it wasn't my lane. But yeah, I mean, the things that have always inspired, like when I was a kid and when I first started listening to music, I would say Michael Jackson was like my first influence.
Yeah.
I mean, I just loved Michael Jackson. I would watch that movie Moonwalker over and over and over, right? It was so good. I like impersonated him. You know, I had a Michael Jackson impersonator come to one of my birthday parties. I remember
that. Oh, you're serious,
man. Had me come up and dance with him, you know, and I was like super into it. I had all the moves. I was like, I was down. So he was huge. And then it kind of like, as I got a little older, we started getting into like, you know, the very early days of rap. I was born in 81. So it's like kind of the very beginning of the 90s and even the late 80s. Like we started getting into rap. I loved it because as this one guy said, Kanon, there's this little verse that I like of his. And I really appreciate one of these lines. He said, rap, it understood me, it made my ghetto heaven, and I understood it as the new poor people's weapon. And that's really what it felt like. Like growing up in LA, I'm in Malibu, I'm like living this extremely privileged, you know, sheltered life, and yet I could put a pop a CD in and listen to what the life was like for guys that were living 45 minutes that way in Compton and Central LA.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, this is wild, you know? I mean, it felt like these guys were at war or something, you know? It was just such a different life, and it was fascinating to me, and I just loved it. And it wasn't about what you had. It was all about the struggle. It was all about... Yeah, I mean, it was all about, like, you know...
All integrity and perseverance.
Yeah.
And overcoming.
Yeah. I mean, it was sticking it to the man. It was just saying, this is all fucked up. Like, we're in a, you know, we're up against the system. And it was great. It was very cool. Very, very cool. And it was dangerous. And it just felt like it really, like Kaon says, kind of made your ghetto heaven. You know, it was like the idea of being this little kid, but then you get to kind of immerse yourself in this life that is so different, you know, but... from what felt like a safe distance, you know, at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was fascinated by it. So I would say 90s rap, and that's partly why, and you know, not to throw shade on anybody that is making rap and saying really cool stuff, because there is a lot of still great stuff over there, but I kind of stopped listening to it and just got disinterested when it more became about like what you have, and it's like, hey, it became more about abundance rather than flaunting their abundance rather than voicing their struggle.
Yeah.
And that's when I just kind of, you know, more lost interest. But I still appreciate a lot of, you know, hip hop and stuff that's out there. But and then there's great songwriters you know, I often think, what would the world, you can't really quantify it, but like, how different would the world be if Bob Marley and John Lennon had never existed?
Oh, yeah.
And it would be different.
It would be, yeah.
I mean, if Bob Marley never existed, the world would be different. Without him, you know, everything's going to be all right. And all these just great songs with energy and meaning and conviction. I think you just kind of, you make the world just a little bit better every time with each one of those artists. So those are the ones that inspire me, are the ones that are, you know, committed to really using their life and using their energy to say something and to attempt to make the world a little bit better.
No, I love that. That was a great answer, by the way.
Oh, great. No, probably long-winded. No, you can chop a lot of this stuff out, you know.
We're leaving that in. Yeah, no, it's good. All right, so another question is, you still actively go out and sing in places and stuff, like you go on tour or do gigs or anything still, correct?
Oh, yeah.
So tell me this, how was it doing your first gig? Where was it and how did you feel and like what was the experience like for you your first
time? It was
time?
In Malibu.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, my first gig. Mm-hmm. My first gig was fine. It was in Malibu. I had my guitar teacher at the time play with me. It was like a typical just high school talent show, kind of like middle school talent show kind of thing, you know, played some songs that I had written, you know. I was playing a lot of electric guitar at the time, so you know, I was figuring it all out. I mean, it was fine. I remember doing, it was right here in Malibu at the Malibu Inn, the old Malibu Inn. That was the first place I ever played. And then I started a band, and I remember being, you know, in the studio, drinking, hanging out, partying at my studio and down the road from Malibu Inn, and you know, us being like talking to the guy that owned Malibu Inn, or ran at the manager at the time, and he was like, you guys can come and play if you want. And we were like, we had a new song that we were like, this is the coolest fucking song ever. It's gonna blow people's fucking minds when they hear it. They're not gonna believe it.
Yeah.
And so we were like, there's another band playing, but we can go, and let's just go set up and like do it.
Yeah.
And the guy, I think it was Billy Wilson that was playing before us, this blues guitar player who was a really good guitar player, nice guy. And he had like a nice little crowd there, you know, there are a few people. And so he gets done and we go and we set up and some of them stick around. They're like, all right, well, I'll watch this. I'll check this out. We started playing. Room cleared out.
Oh my
God. Oh my God. Cleared the room out. The room was gone. Like people just left, right?
How old were you?
I was probably like 22 or 23, oh, something like that. Yeah. You know, it was probably your age, Tim, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget that, you know. It was just like, all right, wow, the things, you know, we really thought we had this great song, and we blew it too, because we had just written it, so we didn't like nail it the way that we wanted to. And it was just so funny. So I've had a lot of different experiences playing music.
Was there ever a fun, like, is there one memorable kind of performance that you did that just stands out?
Oh, there's tons. Sometimes things are like a blur, but I mean, I remember recently I was on the road and opening for someone, and I would do a solo acoustic thing, and sometimes it would be in a venue where it would require a little bit more groove, and I had a loop station, and I'd build kind of loops on the fly, and it'd be a little bit more up groovy because I felt like that's what it needed. And then there was this time where I was in a theater. And I was like, well, this is a nicer environment. People are seated. It's quiet. It was like a big church. Mm-hmm. And I got to play some of these songs that are a little bit more meaningful to me, right?
That's
awesome. For example, when I was at a show in Denmark, in Copenhagen, I played this show, and this really nice woman came up to me afterwards, and she was said all the right things of like, I love your music. You know, you're great. I was very grateful and appreciative. And then she said, I have a favor to ask of you. And I was like, okay, here we go. What is it, you know?
Yeah.
I know what it is. and she says, you're my favorite songwriter, and I want you to write a song for me. Oh, and I was like, oh, that's really sweet. And then she says, I was recently diagnosed with something that's going to keep me from being around. I'm not going to be around very long. Oh, and she said, and I have young kids, and I want you to write a song for me about that. And I was like, oh, well, this is...
Oh, man.
Beautiful and tragic and everything all at once,
and
right?
And an honor, yeah, wow.
And so, yeah, and an honor. So it was like, I'm on the plane home, you know, eventually thinking like, wow, you know, I've got to do it. Mm-hmm. Communicated with her a little bit. And then, so I wrote a song about it. So now, cut to, you know, years later, this song has been out now. made a great video that I was really proud of, kind of like shot it and directed it and edited it myself, but it was, I wanted it to be exactly what I wanted. And I'm at a theater, and I realized as I was explaining this song, I was like, this woman's a hero of mine, because she had the bravery to come up and, you know, have an awkward conversation or have ask a favor of someone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That maybe for her might have been a bit of a challenge, but she did it. And because of it, because of her bravery in that moment, she, you know, enlisted me to try to take that energy that she's feeling ultimately, which is what I try to do, walk in her shoes, sit with that energy, write a song, record it, put it out into the world with, and I decided I'm gonna explain why I wrote this song and what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have people comment and write me and say, thank you for doing that, because I just lost my dad, I just lost whoever, just lost somebody. Like, you know, we all know what it feels like to cry when you're going through something, and to have that feel like a weight off. You come out the other end, you're just that was part of the processing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for people to watch the video and listen to the song and have a good cry and process some emotions, it just makes me have so much appreciation for her and for the process and for music and what it's capable of and all the people that have come before me that have written songs that have helped me get through breakups and stuff. So I would say that, you know, that theater in, somewhere in, I don't know, Connecticut or something like that, I played that song and it was a really nice moment for all of us in there, because I think they really appreciated it. So
yeah, it's good to have a song to kind of connect with your emotion. It does help with letting that out.
That's what it's all, yeah.
So it's impacting for people, really, what you did there, singing that song.
That's the goal. That's the ultimate thing, right? It's the circle of gratitude. I'm so grateful that music, that there's songs that I've been able to listen to driving in my car when I was a 16-year-old kid going through a breakup and crying and being like, listening to
Boys,
you know, Ben Harper's Forever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then it's like you go out, you make music, you have your life experiences, and then you record your music, you come back, and then all of a sudden that music that you're putting out is helping somebody else. It's like we just move in circles sometimes. And so to be a part of that circle and to kind of complete it and to feel like you're back in that place where, like, now you're the conduit and you're the person that is helping others process something, it just feels right. It just feels like you're exactly where you're supposed to be in your life and that everything makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good feeling.
Man, that's amazing. So I want to talk about your family.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that your wife's expecting again. I heard she says she's expecting like 2-3 months.
What gave it away?
Yeah. Little belly.
Yeah.
She's excited. Y'all are going to wait to know what the gender is when they're born, huh?
She's all about that.
Yeah.
And I totally respect it, and I'm excited about it. Now I'm all about it, too, because we did that with our boys. And, you know, it's one of life's, like, greatest surprises.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I found out with my daughter initially, and it was great, you know. It's like nice just seeing it in a text and going like, oh my God, I can't believe we're having, you know, this gender. But there's nothing like being in the delivery
and
room and it popping out and going like,
there it is.
Got a couple little sacks. That's what it was with my boys, you know. I was like, it's a boy. It's pretty obvious, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's a nice thing. It's nice to wait. It's a great surprise.
So can you tell the age of all your children?
Yeah, I have an 8-year-old daughter and then 4-year-old twin boys.
That's amazing. So they keep you guys busy, I guess?
Oh, no. I was going to try to make a joke there. Very busy.
Uh-huh.
Very busy, yeah. In the greatest of ways. But, you know, sometimes your tank gets very depleted.
I can imagine.
Sometimes you're just like, okay, this has been. You know, and especially when one parent is down, like Kaylee having morning sickness during the pregnancy and stuff like that. All right, you know, now dad just steps up and it's just full daddy duty.
Yeah, so that's why you had to have this coffee.
That's why I have the coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we start filming, you was telling me stuff about coffee. Can you repeat that, man? I think that was amazing.
Oh, the waiting until I try to wait to have caffeine until after. I've allowed the adenosine to absorb into your body, which takes a little bit of time. When you wake up, you're groggy. Got to get rid of that groggy feeling.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to block the receptors because that's what caffeine and adenosine, they look like the same molecule. So your receptors get blocked, And then you have all that extra adenosine in your body from when you wake up, and that's why you have that crash as we reach a half-life with the caffeine, and it starts to deteriorate, and now all of a sudden all that adenosine that's been building up in your body throughout the day, is you have the big influx of it as the caffeine wears off, and that's why you have the crash. So if you can stave off having your coffee
for a few hours,
I think a few hours. I mean, they say 90 minutes, right? Like that was the rule of thumb, but I think it's minimum 90 minutes. I would say if you can, just hold off for
two or three hours. Maybe.
I think so. Hold off for 2 or 3 hours.
I'm gonna try that.
The longer I wait, the more I enjoy it when I finally get it. You know, too.
Yeah, I love coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, going back to your family. So, how did you meet your wife?
So she's local. She grew up in Malibu here, and I just kind of like knew of her. I saw her a couple times, and I was blown away by her beauty. And then a few years later, I was talking to my brother on the phone. I had gone through a divorce, and I was like single all of a sudden for the first time in a while. And I was like, wow, this is a new life. And I was talking to my brother about my new life, and he was like, what about Kaylee Stoker? And I was like, oh, wow, I remember her. And he was like, she's single now, because she was always in relationships. He's like, you should, you know, hit her up. And so then there was the awkward thing of me, you know,
reaching out.
which she was, you know, not that receptive at first, you know, didn't know really anything about me. And then, but when we ran into each other and then went on a hike and my first date, we were just all in. Felt like it was right. So it's been great.
And how long have y'all been married now?
We just celebrated our 5 years together, 4 years married, and we have 4 year olds.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Now, you were telling me you guys just started a podcast. Where can people find your podcast?
We're just getting it going right now. We're just getting a bunch of content together, so we haven't released anything. We really want to talk about parenting. I mean, this is like such a big part of our lives.
Kaylee
was a preschool teacher, and she has a degree in early childhood education, and she's just like the best with when it comes to like handling kids. And so we want to like sit down and the hope that through our experience and through other people's experience that we want to have on as guests, that as a parent or a new parent, that there might be some experiences that we've gone through that will help them to navigate parenthood, because it's a real not only is it challenging and complicated, it really tests you as an individual. I mean, you realize pretty quickly that you're going to show up as a better parent if you navigate all the things that you've gone through in your life, right? So it's a real time for reflection for you to become a better person so that you can not pass on stuff that you're dealing with in your life that you might be able to deal with no problem if it's just you that you're taking care of. But when you're taking care of somebody else, and a lot of the ways that you speak and talk to and parent and discipline and all that stuff, when you start to see that, oh, wait, I'm doing it because that's the way it was done to me. It's a complicated thing, but it also is such a very important thing for us to focus on as parents, because, you know, it's our kids that are going to make the world, shape the world moving forward, right?
That's why.
It's up to our kids to kind of make the world a better place.
Absolutely. So pass good values.
So the better that you can raise them, and the more, you know, conscious you are of how you raise them and all the things that you do, I think that you have the ability to actually really... it will pay dividends with how the world looks, you know, decades and centuries from now.
Yeah. Honestly, one thing I noticed about you and Kelly, y'all work not only as a couple, but as a team together. I can definitely tell. And y'all love your kids. And just given the atmosphere of where you live, it's just amazing. I think that's a real good upbringing for the kids.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I think so. We think that we're, I mean, we get along really well, and we are a team. You know, we also, you know, fantasize sometimes about the date night that we have coming up and stuff, times where we could just go back to being a couple and not just kind of like, you know, co-workers, because sometimes, you know, we're just managing so much.
Yeah.
So it's important to maintain that. We do have date night every week, which is really important for us. And then, you know, we recently went to Big Sur and had a great trip, just the two of us for a few days, which is awesome. It's important to do those things so you can maintain a good
Good relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, man, I'll be on that podcast. I'm excited. Cool. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say I'll be on that next trip. Oh, you can come with us. You can come with us if you want.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. You're invited, yeah.
All right, so I got two more questions for you. So where do you see yourself in the next 3 to 5 years? Mm-hmm. One in family, like family-wise, and one with business. Like, what are some things that you see in both?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll start business. Business, I really am motivated to release a whole bunch of music, to become far more prolific, not with necessarily what I write, because I write a lot, but yes, with what I write, but mostly with what I deem is appropriate and worthy of being released out into the public. I think that I've being my own producer, you know, somebody who produces and my own stuff and generally mixes my own stuff and everything, records it.
I didn't know you.
I can be very particular and like very critical, and so I really need things to be of like, you know, I'm not just showcasing my writing skills and my playing skills, but I'm also, whenever I release something, I'm kind of like showcasing my production skills, which takes a long time. And I kind of want to like dial that back a little bit and not be so concerned about production and just be concerned about like writing great songs and getting those out more simple form. So I'm really kind of focused on just releasing a whole bunch of music that is just more raw, imperfect, but at a more consistent pace.
Gotcha.
So I think it'll also be so rewarding and liberating for me to not feel like I'm releasing, you know, an EP a year or something like that, which is a very small amount of music for me. So that's like the first and foremost with when it comes to business. And then with family, you know, we're gonna have a fourth kid. So I want to just really establish a dynamic with regard to, like, it's really important to me to kind of create a tribe around our kids.
I like that. That's
I think that the way it's kind of unnatural the way that we've now live as a society now, how we live in suburbia, everybody gets their own kind of like home. And then when it really kind of rears its ugly head is when you have kids. You have kids, and now you're stuck in a condo or an apartment somewhere or in a house with, you know, neighbors that are close and not a lot of outdoor space and not a lot of places for your kids to go. And maybe your grandparents aren't around, right? Or your parents aren't around so that the kids don't have grandparents. You don't have, like, a tribe.
No, I love that.
It's very taxing on everybody.
Yeah.
It's taxing on the parents because they're carrying, like, a workload that is just way too much. It's taxing on the kids because they're not getting you at your with when your tank is full, right? Because you're just kind of constantly operating at, like, you know, a quarter tank, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's just so hard. So the more that I can kind of create a tribe around my kids with family, cousins, and then even, you know, help. We have an au pair that lives here at the house who's been just such a great help. But that's fantastic. You know, it's somebody that they love that can really help to kind of carry the workload. Those things are, that's really what I want to build, is to kind of like build a nice, as best as we can, a good equilibrium and harmony amongst all of the people that live in the house, so that we can all kind of operate from 3/4 tank full instead of 1/4 tank.
I got you. Yeah. Good support for each person. No,
yes.
That's amazing.
Yes, good,
I like
natural
that tribe. I love
and support. Because I also believe that the more people your kids love, it opens up their capacity for love.
Yeah. All right. So, last question here is, when it's all said and done, what would you like to be remembered for? I think you said a lot of stuff that already has said that, Teddy, but if it's like a small little paragraph of that, what would that say?
Oof, I don't know.
Or you can do it like this. What if you could have one thing, and it's a little morbid, okay? If you could have one thing written on your tombstone, what would that one or two sentences be?
I think that this will be a little bit more than two sentences, so I don't know, but it'll maybe bring me to the two sentences. I think that as a society, we platform and elevate people that clearly are unencumbered by other people's opinions, right?
Yeah.
Like, they just live the life that they think that they're supposed to live. I mean, I think that's partly why we elevate whether it's musicians that we admire because they're just so themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Political figures, we do that too, when they're just kind of like off the cuff and we're just like, they're so themselves, you know? They're not like strategic. They're not trying to please anybody. They're just, they have conviction, they believe it, and I appreciate that in people. We do it with comedians. There's comedians that say crazy shit with Dave Chappelle. We're all just like, he's not censoring himself for anybody, you know, he's not trying to be nice, he's just being the way he is, you know, I think he is actually just a nice, thoughtful person, generally speaking. It might not always sound like that to people, but to me, the humanity shines through, and I think that's what, it might not be the loudest, and most opinionated and most outlandish and most controversial, but I still want to live my life as unapologetically myself as possible.
True to yourself.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd like to be remembered for. That's what I'd like my kids to be inspired by. Is like, you know what? My dad, he loved deeply and cared deeply about people and always let people know that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He was somebody that, you know, truly was transparent in the way that he felt and how he lived his life. And mm-hmm. you could get, you know, an honest opinion from him, and he lived his life trying to make other people feel good about themselves, because I think that's the thing that maybe brings me the most joy, is making other people feel really good about themselves.
No, that's amazing, man. So if anyone wants to find you, where can they find you online and
other stuff? Than right here?
Yeah,
drinking my coffee next to you.
Yeah.
Honestly, the best way, I mean, if you're into music, Spotify, Apple Music, those are great places to listen to all the things that I've put out throughout the years, and hopefully there's some music in there that speaks to you. And then Instagram's like the only kind of thing that I use social-wise, you know?
Yeah.
I do the best I can to communicate with people that are there for music or just are interested in communicating with me, so I try to do as good of a job there as I can. Instagram, Spotify, Apple Music, that's basically about it.
Yeah.
Or text me, because I don't deal with email. I'm sick of email. It's too much spam. I'm just done. I just can't deal with it. Sick of unsubscribing from things.
So what's your Instagram handle, just so everyone can
It's my name, Brandon Jenner.
Okay. At Brandon Jenner. Okay.
That's right.
Well, man, I appreciate it. Like I said, it's an honor you let me come back and you take time to see
me. Come on,
again,
this is
man.
A treat. We got a thing going on.
Yeah, we have to go flying again soon.
Is that what they call it, a bromance? Yeah. And we'll go flying again soon.
We will.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Thank
Thanks,
you, man.
Shane. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. Like I said, this is our first podcast. Again, thank you to Brandon, and we'll see you next time.